A highly unique game improvement book is now available from Back 9 Press, one that can actually improve your entire game. Mark Immelman's Lessons from the Best includes insights, tips, and tricks from 18 different tour pros and teaching pros. Most importantly, Immelman contextualizes these insights to teach you how to be your own swing coach and mental coach. Back 9 Press publishes other great golf books the game deserves. They're publishing great stories about the history of the game and compelling writing on the issues that define golf today and its future. Whether it's coffee table books with course photography, memoirs, collections of essays, reissues of classic books, or even two fun children's books, Back 9 Press covers all things golf. Golf books make great gifts too, and Father's Day is just around the corner. There's something for everyone at back9press.com. That's back9 with the number 9.com. Welcome back to The Loop. I'm Alex Myers. As always, I'm joined by Steve Hennessy and Christopher Powers. We've got a fun show coming up today, including guest Kevin Kisner. Obviously, PGA Tour star slash broadcaster for NBC. He's been filling in some there in the booth this year. So a lot to talk about with Kevin coming up. But first, we got to talk about Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry winning the Zurich Classic. Guys, none of us picked them. They were obviously the favorites. The favorites are now back in
one of them
form, yeah. I guess. I think they were the you're right. Xander
and Cantley
were the favorite. Right. But they were like plus 750, plus 700. To be honest, they were the only named recognizable.
They saved it.
They saved the tournament.
It was such a snooze fest. Like, if they didn't win, and like Zach Blair and Fishburne,
Lawrence Fishburne,
Fishbum, they. I mean, people would have been coming for the Zurich Classic, you know, with stakes walking down.
I mean, Joel already was kind of.
I know.
With our Joel Beal was pretty brutal. He kind of said, like, this is the best it's going to get. And like you said, Steve, it could have gotten a lot worse. I mean, look, you know, we love the underdog stories, but you can't have it where every story is an underdog story. I mean, and at one point when I looked, I mean, Rory and Shane kind of rallied late. I know they made the bogey in 17 too, but at one point, like, other than them, the top 12 teams, you honestly would have to really think hard if you knew who those players were.
I would just do 4 days of alternate shot because this, you know, I had Thompson and Novak and they're tied. They're one back after the first round. And I think they were tied for second after 36. And I knew they had no fucking chance to win the tournament because this best ball with two really good players, which that's, they're all very good if they're in a PGA Tour event. Like,
right.
It's kind of a joke. It's like a, you know, it's like a two-man scramble almost for these guys.
Right.
So I think alternate shot would kind of weed out, you know, the Cinderella stories, like you said, Myers, and the cream of the crop would kind of rise to the top. But when you got this best 2 days of best ball, when guys can shoot 58s, it's like, and nobody's can shoot 58s and then they get in contention. Then you have what we almost had, which was a really brutal leaderboard. But yeah, Rory and Shane saved. And look, shout out to, I tweeted about this, shout out to Trainer and Ramey for shooting a 63 in all.
Unreal. Yeah.
To get into the
record.
Playoff.
Had the record in the event. Yeah.
Of course, they did it with probably no pressure whatsoever and probably didn't think it was going to be enough to get into the playoff like they did. And then after 3 hours, obviously Martin Trainer was not in peak form.
Yeah,
based off that chip and that putt, but amazing, almost changed their careers. I'm sad for them. I'm sad that they shot an alternate shot 63. And after that trainer punt, we're all like, what a bum. Thank God he didn't get a 2-year exemption. So I feel bad for them. But that was still wildly impressive by both.
But even
Trainer would have had 2 PGA Tour wins.
I know.
That's more than Will Zalatoris.
Yeah,
someone who has been so below average of a PGA Tour pro, which is obviously at the cream of the crop of all golfers, as you pointed out, CP. Like, I mean, just bananas. And I do love the team format, like, to make a PGA Tour event stand out a little. You know, there's no more match play. You need something a little different, but I'm with you, CP. You got to change up something. I mean, Rory and Lowry saved it, and all this stuff after, like, you know, creates a great narrative after the fact that, oh, this was a success. But I don't know. It was kind of brutal for 4 days.
I mean, by the time Thompson and Noah, I wanted them to win and they had no chance, but by the time they teed off Saturday, it's like, they were tied for the lead to start. They're like 5 back by the time they teed off.
It's crazy.
Because some guys who went out in the morning with no pressure shoot a best ball 59. It's a little ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, I you make a good point. The only problem with weeding out is that just the field is so bad to begin with that, like, I don't even know who you're really weeding out. What I don't get, guys, is you see Shane Lowry and Rory, and I know it took Rory years to do this event. He said that he's been asked many times. He said, quote, Bubba Watson hounded me for years. And he made it clear it was nothing against Bubba. He just, like, it didn't work out with the schedule or whatever. But you see how good of a time these guys have together. And it is such a fun event if you're buddies with someone. And obviously a lot of these partners are, you know, either brothers or your buddies or, you know, Russ Cochran was even, we all kind of were like, what the heck is Russ Cochran doing here? He's the dad of Eric Cole's caddy. So, you know, you have all these, like, kind of cool connections. I just wonder why more big names don't do it, especially you see, maybe they will. You see Rory McIlroy winning and singing karaoke after, and, you know, Don't Stop Believing and everything else and having a few beers. I mean, maybe that will get more people into it, but, like, it just was starting from such a bad field. And this is now, I think, the 8th year they've done it. You would just think that the field would get a little better by now.
Yeah.
It's kind of a tough part of the schedule too.
It is. You know, it is.
So I get that. And whatever.
And Rory was playing this was his 4th week in a row.
That's impressive that he held to his word. You know, if it wasn't with Lowry, I bet he wouldn't. And, you know, someone else made this point too. Like, you had, I think, Jazz Fest going on in New Orleans. Like, I don't know if it was last weekend or it's, like, around here. They have to do a better job of, like, playing up that it's a New Orleans event and, like, so much cool, like, culture and stuff like that. Like, I feel like that's sort of lost on anyone watching the broadcast that they're, you know, they're not really that close to New Orleans. They're 40 minutes from the city, but still, like, you know, lean into it, make it cool.
Make it, like, live.
Team golf, pretty cool, it turns out.
Team golf, music festivals, play the music during the event. Like,
people getting credit for team wins.
Play the hits.
I did love Lowry being like, I'll definitely be back here next year. I don't know about him.
Right.
He said that.
And I loved how it came out that that Rory did ask him, not the other way around, because Lowry kind of played it cool, but it was some sort of boozy lunch that they had after the Ryder Cup when they were still riding high, and they stuck with it. But Lowry wasn't even sure until, I think, Christmas, he got a card from Rory that said, like, you know, let's, you know, we're going to do it in the Zurich. And that was a nice Christmas present, Lowry said. So, and now it's a really nice Christmas present.
Oh, tough to stick to booze up plans. That is
tough. So good job by Rory there. Who knows what he did, what plans he made last night during the karaoke booze fest.
Why was Lowry not singing? Like, this guy, you know, we see him in the Open and he's, you know, he's dancing and chanting in Dublin bars, and, like, you know, now he can't sing a little Don't Stop Believing.
I don't know, but
not a Journey guy.
Rory carried him the whole week. Him the whole week on stage, on the course.
That was a good dad joke. See, you're learning.
That was good. So shout out to those guys. Of course, this did spark a little bit of reignited a debate on Twitter. It's really not much of a debate because Brandel Shambly weighed in on it, and he's 100% right.
No, he's always right.
Which he is. He basically he's always right. Anyway, it was Gary Williams actually started it, and he said, "You think Tiger's going to give Rory some shit for his 25th tour win being a team win? Rory leaves DJ and Gary player behind with 24." And like honestly, Tiger probably will give Rory some shit about that because it's kind of crazy that it counts the same. So then Brandel jumped on that, and he said, "Team wins should have their own category amongst tour wins. Most golf fans, if not all golf fans, assume individual wins when a player's tour total tour wins are named. But Sam Snead has 5 team wins counted amongst his 82 wins, while Tiger has 0 team wins in his 82 wins. So I ask you, who has won the most tour events of all time? It is Tiger." And again, Brandel, 100% correct. He just retweeted my story from a few years ago when I did a deep dive into this. And my point wasn't just to like knock Sam Snead. It was just it's just puzzling why the way the tour counts Snead's wins, but don't count Tiger. And so I came up with the thing that based on the way they count Snead's wins, Tiger actually has 95 career wins. And that includes, he won a team title. He won with David Duval, the 2000 World Cup, not the year he made the famous chip in. That was the next year he made the famous chip in. Yeah. On the 18 to get into the playoff. They lost that playoff. This was a big event back then, by the way.
Argentina, and they beat Angel Cabrera.
Right, they beat Angel Cabrera. Romero
in Argentina.
Bingo, exactly, Steve. And then, and the next year when they lost, I think they lost to a great team. I don't know if it was Goosen and someone, but like it was a big event. That doesn't count for Tiger, but yet Sam Snead has 5 team wins. It makes no sense. So, I mean, CP, I know, like you said, you agree, Brandel, all absolutely, over it.
Always right. And he said, you know, I would say most golf fans think of it as individual. I would say all golf fans, when we're talking about these records, are not thinking like, oh, how many of those came in team events? It's like, oh, he must right. have 20 whatever individual wins. So, yeah, Brandel's never missed, ever, literally once.
You've pointed out, Myers, like back in the day, there was like a committee appointed by was it Dean Beeman at the time?
Very good. Yeah,
kept switching like who, you know, which wins counted for Snead, and so you know, it's not like it's Fugazi, but it's right. it's not consistent because it wasn't. Changed.
I remember reading that, Myers. Well, weren't some of them like not even 72 holes?
Yeah. So here, I'll give you a little breakdown here.
Sam Snead hour.
He was. I mean, again. This is not to kill Snead because Snead was actually pissed when they changed his totals, as Steve alluded to with Dean Beeman and a committee. He thinks he should have at least 89. He actually has 165 pro wins, and so only less than half of those are technically counting. But of the ones that did count, I've got here the 1937 Crosby, aka Pebble Beach, shortened to 18 holes because of weather. That counts. There are 3 36-hole triumphs, which would not count. Obviously, you have to get to at least 54, as we saw this year with Wyndham Clark. So that's already 4 right there. And then there was another one. He won the 1946 World Championship of Golf. 4 players in the field. Yeah. 4. I mean, come on now. Then he has 5 wins against fields of 16 or fewer. So I think that's when I argued. Tiger, Tiger's won the Hero World Challenge, which by the way is 18 players or whatever. And it's a stacked 18. Mm-hmm. He's won that 5 or 6 times. And then I write in here, he has 5 team events. So you could take out about 15 of these wins. But again, I don't want to take away his wins. Give him the wins. Just give Tiger his wins for the Hero, for the World Cup, I forgot, whatever else, it gets us to 95 from 82. It gets Tiger an additional. And again, this is like not, this is just giving him what Snead has.
Yep.
So I think at some point, whether it's Jay Monahan or whoever, they'll get their own committee together and they'll say, this is not right. Tiger's the rightful tour title leader, and they will fix it, I would hope. And again, I hope they're not taken away. I just hope they'll add some to Tiger. And people will come out and say it's BS, but right now, the way the record is BS.
All these sports, I'm a record book guy, but the way these sports are changing, like the NFL, I mean, it's,
How do you compare it now?
Yeah, you can't even compare. And, you know, hope they make the players a major someday. The records book will change again. So it's, you know, that's how it works.
And that's another one. Brandel's on board with that.
Yeah. He's right.
Brandel.
The Tiger will have 17 then, retroactively.
Oh, well, also, what about Tiger? When Tiger won the U.S. Amateur, that was a major. Then all of a sudden, Tiger won 3, and the people were like, oh, I don't know about that. Oh, we don't want him to have all these majors. It's not fair. I mean, seriously, it's a joke. When Nicklaus won in 86, you can hear the announcer say, this is his 20th major win.
Yep.
And then somehow all of a sudden Tiger did it and they start scrapping away. I mean, it's ridiculous. So it's rigged against him. Hopefully it'll be solved. But yeah, again, good job by Brandel reigniting this debate. We'll keep having it on and on. It's just amazing because it was like Tiger hasn't, you know, he barely played. He's not even in the conversation. And somehow Brandel gets Tiger in the conversation and gets everybody worked up, including me and you guys. So
when that committee is formed, Alex Myers deserves
I have to be on the committee.
At the table.
They got to put me on. It's all Brandel.
100%. Yeah.
Brandel has to be on, obviously. I mean, you got to look to him. All right. I mean, do we want to talk Liv? I mean, shout out Liv. They had their big week again. CPI.
Got to talk Brandon Steele.
All right, we got it. I'll let you take the floor because you're.
There's no floor for me. I was watching it.
It's
on in the middle of the night, right?
Yeah, I couldn't watch it.
That was the unfortunate thing. Like, CW only had, you know, tape delay. I mean, I wanted to watch, like, you know, what's the big deal about this event in Australia, whatever. So I did watch Saturday night on the Liv app. And,
oh, nice. Look at you.
You know, watched for like a half hour or so. Rom was making a charge. The crowds were pretty electric.
They were. They're amazing. Yeah.
The whole watering hole thing was cool, except Lucas Herbert's caddy, as you wrote about, Myers. Not so cool. Getting pegged in the head with was it a water bottle or a beer bottle?
It was a water bottle, but it was a full water bottle.
Full. Yeah. Yeah, that's got to hurt.
That can do some damage. So yeah. That was dumb. It was the last hole of the day. They were on 12. They finished on 12, and Herbert was an Aussie. But yeah, you never throw a full water bottle. That's just.
No.
But no, Steve, I mean, it did look electric. It looked electric last year. It's clearly been the biggest success that they've had of any tournament.
Yes.
And now they got the Rippers or Team Ripper, for the Aussie team, in the playoff. And they won the playoff. And the crowd was booing. Now, of course, it's cool now. The crowd was booing when, forgot who it was, Louis Oosthuizen left a bunker shot in the bunker. I have no problem with it. If they want to make, especially if they want this to be a little different, but the crowd was relentlessly heckling this other team. But anyway, it was a crazy, it was like an NBA playoff atmosphere. Knicks Philly, well, it's not Knicks Philly because Knicks, you know, the New York crowd took over Philly. But other than that, it was an atmosphere that looked pretty good, CP, right?
Yeah, good for them.
All good for them. I don't know. They haven't sustained it. Now Norman said, you know, there's talks to have more events in Australia. I mean, okay, great, good. They should. I mean, if that's the crowd they're going to get, then it
looks I'm sure those guys all love traveling to Australia. Totally.
I know that's the thing.
Well, then, you know, they have an event in Singapore. I think that's this week, right? So at least they're sort of making it worth it. They're doing a little little swing.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
If they're playing this week. Yeah. It's tough to keep track. I got my mom texting me, Liv's on TV. What the heck? She like just found out yesterday it was on TV on CW. I'm like, yeah, it's been on TV for a year and a half. Like, but that's the problem. They
job
just have
marketing. Yeah,
it's tough. You're right, Steve. May 3rd through 5th, that's this week in Singapore, and then the big break, over a month break, till Houston, which will be the week before the U.S. Open, and then they have Nashville after that. So a little American swing after the Asian, Australasian swing, I guess you could say right now. Okay. All right. We're going to get to our talk with Kevin Kisner really quickly. Quick shout out though to another Aussie, Hannah Green. She wins back-to-back times at Wilshire Country Club. Our boy Danny Rapp was out there catching the action. By the way, she has an insane record in this event. A T3, a runner-up, and now back-to-back wins. So I don't even know if Nelly might have made the right decision not playing this week. I mean, Anna Green is like unstoppable. She's like Tiger Woods at Wilshire Country Club. So good move by them. Okay, now, should we get into Kisner? Should we talk a little NBC first? Let's talk a little NBC first. Yeah. Lead into Kisner. Shout out to our Dave Shedlaski, who really wrote a pretty big bombshell piece about NBC golf. And when we got Kevin to come on the show, we didn't know about this story coming out. I'm sure he's aware of some of the inner workings here. But apparently, and it's not a surprise if you're a golf fan, NBC Golf Channel, a lot of cost cutting. We know they moved out of their studio in Orlando a few years back. They all moved up to Stanford. They are covering the Ryder Cup from Stanford, Connecticut last year, the Ryder Cup that was in Rome, Italy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they let Azinger go, which, you know, we weren't that upset about, but that was a total money move. It wasn't even like it was a cost thing. You know, Maltby, Gary Koch, the list goes on, you know. The commercials are still up, everything else. And the big thing now, guys, is they do not have, you know, a lead analyst as we approach the US Open. I mean, this is just wild. You know, I did that spoof video in December of doing like an audition tape for NBC Golf. I thought by the time it published 2 days later that NBC might have a guy. And we're now in almost May and they don't have someone. Steve, how do they not have a broadcaster for the US Open when for so many years their whole identity was that Johnny Miller was the analyst in particular for the US Open? It just blows my mind.
I mean, Johnny Miller, bring him back.
Like, bring him back.
That might be their only option at this point.
He costs too much, probably, though.
Probably. I mean, apparently the negotiations with Zinger like went really weird too, right?
Very weird.
How, you know, Zinger gave them a number and then they just ghosted him and said
the take it or
Well, so right. So apparently
was take it or
they gave
it.
Him a week, 1 year offer, and his agent countered and they said, all right, peace out. He had no idea it was like a take it or leave it
deal. Yeah, yeah.
Which
yeah.
was, I mean, look. Again, I've knocked Azinger as much as anyone. Apparently, he's not happy with me, as we found out. I don't know. Maybe I went overboard. I feel a little bad. But I don't feel bad. I mean, he got a bad deal here in terms of it sounds like they were not negotiating, you know, the proper way. Let's just say that. And they ran him out.
You know, their side of it, like, they didn't really want Zinger so much. So, like, they saw an out and
right. –
That was their out, like, oh, you're going to ask us for more? Well, now we're done.
Yeah. No, I guess that was the way.
Sorry. Go ahead, CP.
I mean, they've had a number of people come try out. Like, I don't think Luke Donald was the answer. I don't, like, he's one of the nicest guys, very smart. He's just, like, not that personality. Faxon is great. Kiz is great. I feel like one of them works. It's just odd that it hasn't happened yet. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk to Kevin here and hopefully we'll find out a little more because look, the guy's played, I think, seven events. He's only 40 years old. I don't think he's quite ready to quite go full all in. That might be the problem. Maybe Faxon is the guy. Dave Shedlaski writes that, you know, he's already on staff. He's already in the tower, basically. Like, it would be a pretty easy move. He's kind of committed to doing that, where some of the other guys like Duval and Leonard and Begay have all, they're trying to play a little on the senior tour. Faxon is not doing that. So it might end up being Brad Faxon, at least for a few years. And that wouldn't be the worst thing. Faxon's very good. So we'll see. Anyway, it is just, as Dave points out, it is bizarre. You could never imagine the Masters being a few weeks away and CBS not having one of the two main people.
It's amazing. Like, I don't remember how long ago it was, but we were writing similar stuff about CBS. And I remember getting a call from Sean McManus. I know Joel has been called by Sean McManus before. Like,
yeah,
you know, we were super critical of them probably yep. 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe it was pre-COVID.
And, yeah, I think so. I think so.
And it has just flipped. Like, they are like running circles around NBC, like seamless transition from Faldo to Immelman.
Yep.
People were kind of questioning Immelman, like, oh, he's kind of bored. Like, he's been great. Obviously, Nance is the GOAT, but just they've innovated. They've got some great technology on the broadcasts. The commercials don't seem to be as, you know, in your face nonstop on CBS as they do on. It was most noticeable during the Ryder Cup was an absolutely brutal watch. I think we all remember. And so was the Open. Unfortunately, it's just playing through nonstop, and then
yep.
you get two shots, and then they go back to commercial. So
give them a little.
CBS has lapped them.
I do like the whole Smiley like happy hour.
Yeah. Yes, shout out Smiley. He's great. Yeah,
with the right guests, like that's a great way to make the broadcast a little different and bring in yep. you know maybe a different demo. I feel like that's the issue. Like we've seen the ratings numbers on all PGA Tour events, they're way down. You know, I don't know if that's because people are streaming and not just watching linear TV. Obviously, that would be why NBC's business is, you know, affected. CBS is in better shape, but you know, at least they're doing some things right. And yeah. I think the happy hour has been cool. A bunch of them have been cool. They've gotten tour pros, you know, sit down with them, and
yep.
they've been entertaining.
I agree with that 100%. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Of course, Kisner has been entertaining as well. Anyway, all right, let's get into our chat with Kevin Kisner. All right, we are excited to welcome four-time PGA Tour winner and current part-time NBC broadcaster, Kevin Kisner, to the show. Kevin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. Y'all doing well?
Doing great. We're definitely doing great. Let's start with just how this year has been different for you. Obviously, still playing some events. We're playing at Zurich. You know, you played at Hilton Head, I think. And but you've done a lot of work for NBC. How different has this been for you this year?
Well, the NBC deal started kind of on a whim. Tommy Roy is a good friend of mine. He called me in the off season, and obviously they made a change and they were looking for people to fill in. And that's how it started in Maui. And I told him I would do Maui for him. I was already headed there to play the Sony Open. So that worked out. I guess they liked it enough to ask me to do Phoenix. And yeah. Phoenix turned into the Players. And then that turned into me saying, guys, I can't keep doing this every off week. My wife's going to kill me if I never never go home for a week. So
right.
My schedule is still planning. I'm planning still to play through the whole season. And I realized, you know, it's more work than I thought as far as being able to do both. So I just told NBC I was going to play through the end of the season and we could reassess after that.
Okay. Interesting. What do you make, you know, obviously, and we did a story just a few days ago. They still haven't nailed down an analyst for the U.S. Open of all events. I mean, would you, I assume you're going to try to qualify, but would you be involved in that coverage if the opportunity came up?
Actually, I'm not going to qualify. I'm going on one of my best friend's 50th birthday parties that week.
Okay.
So I'd already told NBC that, you know, that week was out because they had mentioned maybe me doing it. And I just said, look, guys, I've already made a trip. I've already promised these people I'd go on a trip with them. Gotcha. So I'm not going to change that, my whole schedule, just for the 1 week. But I love working with the guys at NBC. They're great. The whole team's fantastic. They welcome me with open arms. It was a cool experience to learn it. It may be something I want to do when I finish playing, but
right.
It's not something I can do and play is what I've learned.
Gotcha.
Love the priorities in order.
Yeah, birthday party.
Yeah,
that's a good
50th
friend.
Birthday parties. Let's go.
Huge. Yeah.
Well, you just said pre-show you're grinding on the range a little bit, so you're not even going to bother trying to qualify for the U.S. Open. You're saying?
I'm not, because I gave those guys 3 weeks. They asked me like a year ago. They were planning. His wife was, and I was like, look, these are probably 3 weeks. I'm in June that I can do it, and she picked that one, and I was like, well, I guess if we're going, we're not doing the U.S. Open thing. So it's all good. I've played in a bunch of U.S. Opens and loved it. The headache afterwards may not be even worth the
right.
And shoot, I don't even know if I can walk 36 holes anymore to do a qualifier. I might need a cart.
Right, right.
Where's the trip that week?
We're going to Jamaica to the Trial Club. I've never been.
Oh, I've heard good things.
I have too. So that's why I'm excited about going.
Sweet. All right, so there will be golf that week, just not at the U.S. Open, not at Pinehurst.
It might be like barefoot, shirtless golf instead of beating my head against a pine tree in Pinehurst.
Right, that sounds more fun. I mean, I'm just curious, like, what do you think you've learned about golf on TV, you know, being involved with it? I'm not sure how much you watched golf broadcasts before getting involved, because you've obviously been playing for so long, but yeah, maybe something that you learn about it that maybe surprised you.
I noticed that a lot of guys hit it in the same spot on the greens a lot of times. We obviously are showing the best players mostly on the weekend who are playing the best and have control of their ball. And it's very hard to come up with something interesting to say about the same 15-foot putt that breaks right to left of cup.
And
how many times is, well, the other thing is how many times pros miss the same putt. You watch six or eight groups come through and everybody misses it low or everybody misses it high. And I can pretty much call it before it happens. Like, I bet he misses it left. And he misses it left. It's I remember 16 at Phoenix, that front left hole location. Everybody missed it low on from either side of the hole. And I'm like, they obviously can't see as much break as there is there. And I'm sure when I play there again, I'll miss it high because I'll play so much break and then laugh at myself.
What's the reception been like for you, either on social media or fans coming up to you since you've done some of the TV stuff? Has it been pretty positive?
I've gotten all positive, especially in the crowds at tournaments. You know, everybody's like, we love you playing, but we loved your broadcasting too. Everybody wants to know when I'm doing it again. So that's positive in my opinion. And the social media lady from NBC came up to me and goes, holy cow, I've only seen positive on Twitter, which is impossible after one day. So I said, should I retire after one day? She's like, I mean, it can't last this way forever, so you might as well quit.
Absolutely. I'm always curious, kids, with guys like you, you like to be a little irreverent, you know, you like to curse and all that. How hard is it to keep yourself in check when the red light goes on for TV?
Well, I mean, leading up to Maui, I was in full panic mode. Like, when they called, it was, you know, close to Christmas, and they said, you know, will you do it? I said, yeah, I'll do it, but I can't go to New York or anything. I don't have time with three kids to go do any class. And he goes, no, I'll just give you a 20-minute phone call on it. So that was basically my only prep, was a 20-minute phone call. And then the whole time, you know, obviously he told me we can't say certain curse words and other words, and gave me a lot of good information. But, you know, when we were getting ready to go on air, I'm like, how many times have I slipped up and said the F word just in casual conversation about golf? And how am I not going to do that right now? Right. But when the light went on, it was kind of like an interview, you know, it was more that brain mode clicked in, like, all right, you gotta, this is not just hanging out with your buds. So luckily I haven't messed up yet.
All that media training has come in clutch.
You know, one of the funny things was not to say great too much, right?
Okay.
You know, it's so easy to say that was a great shot, that was a great putt, that was a great ball. But you keep saying great, then people don't really understand when great is great. So trying to come up with as many adjectives for great as you can and not sound unlike my redneck Southern accent. I was like, all right, the synonyms are getting a little bit far-fetched. I better bring it back down.
Terrific and excellent.
Exactly. Well,
where's the game at? I know you played Zurich last week, right, with Scott? So.
Yeah, we didn't play too good. I'm watching him hit balls right now. We're both out here grinding on Monday morning because we didn't like our games. But, you know, I've actually been closer in the last month than I have in a while, so I just need to pop off a couple 68s. When I shoot 72 or 3, I feel like I could have shot 68. And it's just kind of, I don't know, what you want to call it, rusty or bad scoring or grinding too hard on the long game to remember how to make six-footers that you need to make to keep the round going.
Yeah,
you know, when you see someone like Billy Horschel, who less than a year ago was breaking down and the lowest confidence he's ever had, and now he wins a PGA Tour event. I mean, does that just tell you that maybe you're just going through a little bit of a rough patch that you can get out of?
Yeah, well, the games, as you guys know, is so much confidence, and good play breeds confidence. And if you don't play well, it's hard to get any confidence. What am I getting confident about if I'm not seeing any results? So I keep telling everybody in my circle, like, if I just pop off a week where I get rolling, I think I'll be back, but I haven't done that yet. So staying patient is pretty hard at 40, but I'm working on my patience every day. My wife says I should have all the patience in the world because I haven't used any yet.
That's good.
I have to ask, you're on the range with Scott right now. A, is he wearing this Aiken hat? And would this ever be a hat you'd be interested in wearing with these big block letters?
Brownie, what hat are you wearing? Yep, he's got it on. They want to know if you're wearing your Aiken hat. Yep, he said yep. No, that one's not. I'm not going to get away. Well, for the right price, I would.
Yeah, bro. Right.
I asked him last week. I said, where did you get that hat? He said, in a shop here in town. I said, how much are they paying you for it? He goes, no, I just like it.
Well, that's one you would probably wear because, you know, that's home.
But Reppin.
That's right.
I mean, all these, like, the one that got me was, it just says teeth. For like teeth of the dog, like you're just walking around with a hat that says teeth on it. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, crazy.
You got to get in on the trend, man.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. So we got to ask you, obviously, about Chicken Cock Whiskey. You are you've been involved with them, I think, for a few years, right? What's your deal with them?
Well, I got to know them through some people in South Carolina. They have a conglomerate of brands and, you know, got interested in the whiskey and got interested in their whole brand and felt like it was a good relationship. So, you know, when whiskey companies start asking you to be able to pick out your own barrels and make your own reserve bottles, I get pretty interested. I don't know if nice. Other people do, but, you know, I was able to go pick out some barrels and make a reserve with their awesome whiskey and just came out with a new double oak aged for 9 years and the master distiller, Greg Snyder, and I kind of put it together. He obviously has all the brains. I have just that one tastes good and, yeah. and it turned out awesome. So, hopefully you guys get to try it soon. And I'm pretty proud of the way it turned out.
Big bourbon and whiskey guy. And we got the PGA at Valhalla. So, you know, that's one of the great homes of bourbon in this country. So, That's good stuff. How about in terms of like golf experiences you've had, Kiz? So, you know, we were talking about Old Barnwell before. That was a great experience CP and I had recently near your hometown. You know, you guys are on such like a hamster wheel of like week in, week out. It's kind of the same places, same events. When you get a chance to kind of unwind a little bit, maybe what's like one or two golf experiences that have really stood out and you've enjoyed?
I love going down to see my buddies at Ohoopee. I think that's a great place down near Vidalia, Georgia. Just went down there on a buddy's 40th birthday trip during Masters, so that was fun. I think they basically identified the ultimate hang in golf, in my opinion. The golf course is just okay, in my opinion. I mean, it's in great shape, but it's not like wow you away. But from the moment you pull in till the moment you leave, you're like, wow, that's everything I want to do on a golf trip. I didn't have to order a meal, but every piece of food was awesome. And I got to play golf with my buddies, do whatever I want. And we really, really enjoy that place. If I had to go pick one place to eat at a golf course, which is a big deal for me, I go to Sage Valley every time. I don't know if you guys tried it near Augusta.
Yeah.
It's one of my home courses here in Aiken. One of my family friends started it many years ago, but it's got the best food by far. So my big thing is I go practice out there and order to go dinner and bring it home on the way home. Nice. And that makes everybody happy around the house.
Nice.
Sweet.
Got to ask, just, you know, we're all watching Scottie Scheffler right now, kind of torch everybody. What has impressed you the most about the kind of recent run he's been on?
Well, first of all, he's got the perfect mindset for it. He's very humble, but loves, you know, super competitive, loves to win. And obviously the physical traits are incredible. I remember two funny stories about him. I played in the Masters with him. I think maybe his first Masters, I was paired with him the first 2 days. And I told my caddy then, I said, man, I think this kid might be really good. Like, he hits every iron shot right at the flag. You don't see that very much anymore. And then here we are, whatever, 5 years later, and he's winning everything. And then at the match play, when he beat me in the finals, I shook his hand and we talked for a second. I was like, look, man, enjoy how well you're playing, because it doesn't last forever. And right. I don't think he's ever finished outside the top 10 since. So I was like, well, maybe yours does last forever, Scotty. Mine just doesn't.
You told an amazing story earlier this year about how Phil Mickelson helped put together the partnerships at the President's Cup. If you could tell us a little more about that, that was pretty wild stuff.
Well, it started, I wasn't in his pod. You know how they do the pods for practice rounds. I wasn't in his pod. And I basically told Stricker, was the captain. I said, dude, I can play with anybody but Phil. You know, he's so out there. that I don't think we can get along long enough to play as partners. We always played practice rounds and stuff against each other.
Okay.
And enjoyed playing against each other. But I'm like, partnership, man, he drives it all over the place. I drive it fairly straight. I don't know what I'm going to do from his drives. And Strick's like, yeah, I got you. I got you. And then the day before the first match, he's like, all right, you're playing in Phil's pod today. And I was like, what? And I get out there and he's like, you're playing with Phil tomorrow. I was like, Strick, what happened? He goes, my hands are tied. He got his astronomy report and you were an A+, and he said he wasn't playing unless he played with you. And I was like, what are you talking about? And Phil literally showed me a list of our team and a list of their team, and it was graded on what their grades were. And so he picked me because I was an A+, and then he wanted to play Jason Day and Mark Leishman because they were D's on the other team. And so if you'll go back and look at history, we literally got paired together every match, and we played those two in every match.
Oh my goodness. This is based on astrology or astronomy, whatever it is.
Yeah, he had an astronomer in California that did this report for him, and he had it all in a notebook paper.
Why did you rate so highly? Why did you rate so highly?
Well, what are they based on? The moon and the I have no idea. I'm not an astrologist. But he sure liked my vibe that week. I can't remember what my energy, that's what he kept calling it.
Energy, okay.
Yeah, my energy was excellent, and he wanted me to face him the whole time he hit his ball so he could pull my energy while he was hitting. What? He's an incredible human.
Yeah, really is.
Big energy guy.
Big energy guy.
Well, man, that was, you know, you peak Kevin Kisner. I mean, Quail Hollow, you know, you're contending there. Carnoustie.
You know,
right there. I mean, Presidents Cups, et cetera. You know, when you reflect upon that time, you know, what was key to making Kiz, you know, being one of the best players in the world? Because truly, I mean, you were right there. What was clicking with your game, you think?
Well, I've never been a great ball striker, but at that point I knew I had pretty good control over my golf ball. And obviously I like to let my putter do most of the talking with that. But, you know, to get the confidence in the long game really brought kind of the bulldog mentality that I've always been known for out. And so I got so confident in it that, you know, I'm just not going to let you beat me was my mentality no matter what. And then when I could figure out where my ball was going, I was like, well, now you're never going to beat me because I was beating you when I didn't know where it was going that much. So I'm trying to pull that back out, but it seems to be harder in your older age to find it. But hopefully that comes out here in the next few weeks.
Kind of leads to my question, not to get too deep, but you're on the range this morning. You just played again. You're still playing. You know, you could slide right into the NBC booth and have a really nice television career. What's kind of still driving you to keep grinding on the PGA Tour?
Well, I haven't played well in 2 years, and I don't really want to go out like that, to be honest with you. I feel like I can still compete with the guys if I'm playing well, which I haven't played what I consider well yet. So it's kind of a sentiment to myself or testing myself to see, you know, how hard can you work to figure it out? You know, if I went and won next week, I'd probably be like, all right, I might be done. I just want to prove to myself that right. I'm not going out like this. And I'm going to grind it out through the whole season until I find, you know, some sort of success. I mean, that's all I really want to see is the work, the fruits of the labor come back and see some success and enjoy it. You know, it's so hard to enjoy it when you're getting your head and teeth kicked in out there, and we've all been through it, but I feel like I'm so close to seeing the other end of this whole, you know, poor run of play that I want to see it through.
Steve mentioned 2018 at Carnoustie. To me, I've just, you know, it stands out on your record in terms of open championships. And we like to make picks every week and whatever. And we're like, oh, what's their course history or what's their history of this event? Does that just like speak to the fact that you were just in a good groove and it didn't even matter like where you were playing? Because other than that, correct me if I'm wrong, your open championship record is not like amazing. But that one you almost won. I mean, it's the closest.
I think the setup there was just perfect for me. It was so firm and so fast that, you know, it was all about ball control and how – you know, so many major setups anymore, just how far can you hit it?
Right.
And I felt like there, you know, it was all about ball control. How can you stay out of the areas? It reminded me almost of Tiger at Hoy Lake whenever he hit iron off the tee on every hole. And that Sunday, Tiger and Mullen played right in front of me. And it was brutally windy, so I felt like the mental side of it played a big role. And, you know, I'm just not going to let bow down. I'm going to figure out a way. But to your point, I think a lot of it is – when you're in the mode, it's just like Scotty right now. He can win at Hilton Head or he can win at Augusta. He's going to win anywhere. When you're on a heater like that, it doesn't really matter where you play.
Last one for me, kids. Where's the big comeback going to be? You know, your comeback win or your contention. What course you think that's going to be? I remember you telling me, you know, years ago, Harbortown, you know, you had two or three courses that you have circled on the schedule. Where's your comeback tour going to be?
I love Colonial, but they obviously were playing a new golf course this year, so I'm not sure how, not a new course, but a new condition and a new couple of holes. Yeah, and I hear it's really firm, so I'm not sure if that's still going to be up to my advantage. But the funny thing is, a lot of courses I'm not in this year on these designated events that I've always played. So I'm playing a lot of new courses, just like this week, Byron Nelson. I've only played there one time, so I don't really even remember the golf course. And you know, I've played so many tournaments this year, I haven't played in many years, so it's hard to pinpoint exactly. I would love to get into the Travelers. I love that golf course. I think it fits me perfectly, but you know, all that's up in the air. So I'm just going to go grind it out wherever we're playing and hopefully get hot as Scotty Scheffler. And it doesn't matter where we tee it up.
Last one for me. Cause you know, obviously you're such a great match play player. You won the world match play. Are you kind of sad that event has gone away? Is that something that you would like to see come back on tour?
For sure. That was my annuity. That's where all my money is. Austin, Texas, man. Right. My whole family in Aiken is wondering why we can't eat like we used to eat because we don't have Austin anymore. I'm kidding. I think the match play is a great tool for the fans and a great tool for the players for cup team preparation. Right. But, you know, they've tried to figure out a way to make it work. I wish they'd just go back to single elimination 64. But I understand the logistics problem of selling that to fans. If Tiger Woods shows up and doesn't play but one match and never makes it to the 15th hole, all the people that bought all this hospitality tents don't really want to hang out. Right. I thought the venue was awesome in Austin for a match play event. I thought being down there on that river and the whole back nine being down in that bottom was really cool. But who knows what the schedule is going to hold in the future, guys. Right. I do think, to answer your question, a match play event should be on the tour.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time. We know you see you're out there grinding away right now. We wish you all the best. You're doing a great job in the booth, but we want to see you win again too. Yep. So get out there, keep grinding, and hopefully we'll see you win back in the winner's circle soon.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on. Y'all have a great week. All right.
Thanks to Kevin Kisner for joining us. All right. What else do we need to talk about? Oh, CP, I have a new guy for you, a new favorite golfer. And I made sure I had to watch a few different videos to get the pronunciation of his name right. I did it wrong last week. Tim Veding from Sweden, who won a second consecutive Korn Ferry Tour title. He broke the record for scoring in relation under par, 31 under par at the Veritex Bank Championship. He's from Sweden. He said he's going home. I think he meant his home in the U.S. And he's going to take a few days off or whatever. And he said, quote, "I can't wait to play a lot of hockey with my friends."
Oh, hell yeah.
So this guy is a future ledge, maybe. And
we love our Scandinavians.
26. Yeah, we love the Scandinavians, dude. They're so hot right now. They're just taking off. He went to the University of San Francisco.
The Dons.
Dons, bingo. And he's rolling right now. And obviously he's one win away from that Battlefield promotion. I don't think they call it that anymore, but we love the old Battlefield promotion on tour. Obviously he's going to get his PGA Tour card for next year at this point with the two wins on the Korn Ferry Tour, but I thought you'd like him. He seems like a pucks guy. Tim Veding. Again, I hope I had to watch a video, a San Francisco Dons video where they interviewed him, and that's how they pronounced his name. So hopefully
that's commitment, Myers.
Hell yeah.
Well done.
Trying to get these names right. I mean, again, Aubert, they switch the pronunciation every week on us, so it's tough.
Oh, I saved the video. I found it on Instagram of Ludwig pronouncing his own name.
I know, but you can't understand it.
Like Ludwig Aubert. Like
yeah, he goes Aubert, and you're like, what? Like, yeah, so
we're still all pronouncing it wrong.
All right. Let's get into, we got the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson, make a few picks here, guys. I know it's Monday, but pretty early Monday. We got Jordan Spieth up at the top, 12 to 1. Jason Day, 18 to 1. He's won this before. Willie Z, obviously, in the mix here, 22. Siwoo, Sungjae. Was Willie Wilcox saying that Sungjae Im really won in Korea this week?
He did. I think so, yeah.
What the heck? The guy went back to Korea, won a tournament?
I think he did something similar last year.
Yeah, sounds familiar.
Yeah.
What a beast. I mean, not even a week off. Like, that's wild. Well, anyway.
I mean, yeah. Unfortunate for our boy, Willie, but yeah. another dub for you, Myers, in the caddy department.
I hate to say it.
I don't think Willie made the trip to Korea and then he won. Of course, it was probably against a very weak field. And
right. But
yeah, we'll see. Maybe Willie will be back on the bag this week. And
sure, he will be.
Sungjae can make a lot of birdies, and you need to make a million this week to win.
Yeah. All right. Steve, your thoughts on this event?
Yeah, I got two guys who stuck out. And we did this video with Keith Stewart of Read the Line. You'll be able to see that on golfdigest.com as soon as you're listening to this, probably. So Mark Hubbard at 70 to 1. He is second on tour. The last 36 rounds in birdie or better percentage per rickrungood.com. Shout out Rick Gaiman. And he was right in the mix at Zurich with Ryan Brehm. I don't think Ryan Brehm was the one lighting it up. You know, no offense to Ryan Brehm. I think Homeless Hubs was carrying the team. So 70 to 1 for Hubbard, I thought was nice. And then Doug Gim, 80 to 1. He, you know, we're seeing him at like 30 to 1 a couple months ago. He's sixth on tour strokes gained total the last 36 rounds, and you know, former Texas Longhorn, back in Texas, can fill it up. Just played well at TPC courses too. So 80 to 1 on Doug Gim, I thought was crazy town. So those are my two.
I don't know how you don't bet on KH Lee at 55 to 1, two-time winner here. This is just one of those shit show events where you need to be 28 under, and I don't want to bet on anyone, so you might as well bet a guy who has done it twice here before. So I will be on KH Lee. And shout out to Kenny Kim. I'm stealing this one from him, but one of his plays was Jake Knapp. I think that's a really nice play. We saw what he did in Mexico. You can kind of drive it everywhere. I think Craig Ranch is pretty similar to that. So our boy Knapp is at 80 to 1. So I like those two. I would take Pepper away this week at the bottom of the board if you want. I don't think, you know, Jordy can obviously light it up at any moment. I don't think he's going to. He just hasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, he did in the first round at Harbortown and then faded to T40. I think he's just a mess right now. So I would stay away from the top of this board and try and hit it big this week.
Yeah. Davis Thompson, 60.
Yeah, you can't get
By the way, I was kicking myself, man. I didn't know you had him, CP. Every time I saw the leaders scroll by on the bottom line or whatever, and I saw he was still leading, I was like, God damn. I was
never had a chance
so hard against him. I'm sorry. I didn't know you had him. Because I wouldn't CP be on too. That first win.
That was in the betting column. That was his. That was one of his picks.
So. Oh, my bad. I didn't even look.
Not as bad as Kraft and Tway, top 10, and they T11th. That was T11. They needed one more birdie.
That was like 11 to 1, too.
10 to 1 on the local, but it would not. I wouldn't have gotten chopped and like a million people tied for 11th. So that was painful.
I love the Knapp pick here. That
90 to 1 in New York right now, Myers.
Shout out Kenny Kim. He's the winner after his Washington Capitals just got swept.
Ooh, ouch.
Well done.
Was that the Rangers?
Yes, it was.
I flipped on last night right when they scored the goal to go up 3-2. So I watched for a few minutes.
Same.
I forgot it was even the Caps. They were up. They swept them, right? Swept them out to sea.
I did. Ovechkin had 0 points for the first time in his career in a playoff series.
Just retire already.
He's washed. He's like Bradley Beal, Myers. He's done.
Washed. Bradley Beal, dude. Man, that brings a smile to my face. The Suns.
I stayed up. I slept a ton.
Oh, I didn't.
Saturday night. So I was kind of wired last night. Stayed up. Anthony Edwards.
Oh, he cooked, right?
40 my dog, points. Georgia he Bulldog.
He had no points in the first quarter when I went to bed. He was like,
he almost ended Durant's life in the fourth quarter.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. Have you not seen the dunk?
No, I got to watch the
highlights. He literally like almost ended his life. It's unbelievable.
Probably the best athlete in the world.
It might be. He's incredible.
I mean, Mookie Betts is obviously always in that conversation, but Anthony Edwards is a special guy,
yeah.
No doubt about it. But anyway, the Suns, you know, ran my guy CP out and bring in Bradley Beal, and they get swept out to sea in the first round.
So T-Wolves were minus one last night. That was such an easy
bet. I know.
That is crazy. Dude, the Suns were favored going into the series.
Yeah.
I mean, no respect for our boy Cat.
None. Or Ant, yeah. Cat or Ant.
So good for the T-Wolves. Yeah, there's speed.
The coach got injured, had to get carried off the court with like 3 minutes. It was unbelievable.
Wait, really?
Yeah, like it might be, I don't know what the, it might be an ACL. He got like, you know, one of those NFL sideline injuries. There was a crash near the bench.
Like the head coach?
Mm-hmm.
The head coach of the T-Wolves, yeah. Left the game with 3 minutes left.
Damn.
I hope he's on a scooter like that Georgia State. That'll be so good.
Legendary.
Scooting around.
Steve, your old boy, Kevin Durant. I mean, woo. His legacy is ruined. What a bum.
He's my old boy.
He was on the Nets, so you loved him.
This is not a Nets fan at that point.
Oh, okay. My bad.
I was messing with you.
I thought I remember you were getting a little hyped when they lost that amazing series.
You're just stirring the pot.
They lost that amazing series against the Bucks. I thought you were in the mix there.
I was stirring the pot for sure. I was saying he's better than LeBron just to get you.
Yeah, you were. Okay, there we go. All right, you were stirring the pot. Okay. Anyway, I'm
actually. Yeah, I mean, at least LeBron pushed it to game five.
Yeah, I'm actually just stunned by, dude, it's his 21st year. Anything he does is a joke at this point. Kevin Durant picks his team every 2 years.
He's going to go to the T-Wolves.
Anything.
100%. Yeah,
exactly. It's embarrassing. Anyway, the Knicks are the talk right now. Let's be honest.
Yep.
I got the hat. Brunson, 47, team record yesterday.
Amazing.
Money lined
him. I actually 5-1 on the NBA playoffs. You guys told me to quit last week. My only loss was
you should quit.
Bucks money line on, I don't know if you watched that game, Friday Night Myers, the Bucks Pacers game.
They came back.
Two buzzer beaters.
Yeah.
Buzzer beater to go to OT, buzzer beater to go to double OT, and they lost.
That's crazy.
Plus 300 or something. It was so good. That's my only loss.
Wow. All right. Well, anyway, exciting show. We will wrap it up for now. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Thanks again to Kevin Kisner for joining us. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Greg Gottfried. Please check back next week to see if CP has any spicy NBA picks. See ya.
That's the extent of our NBA talk.
I knew you were dying. Steve.
Knicks keep going.
Yeah, Steve. Nothing touches the. I know the Rangers, it's great too, but the Knicks.
Yeah, that was.
Playoffs,
that was incredible.
Dude, I'm seeing people on the street wearing, we're like, nah, I mean,